Don't pay the ransom.
Start, isn't it? I'm not exactly sure what was going on there. Foxfire was being a little balky. If you hung around, I appreciate it tremendously that you did. This is James Bostic, Conservatives Perspective. We do this live, barring the unforeseen, two nights a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. We also have the recorded show. That was the original incarnation of this species, and that is done on the weekends, and that's done through the Talk America Radio Network. And you can go to talkamericaradio.org and you can check out their two audio streams, the Liberty and the Justice stream, and you can find ACP there at various times throughout the week and during the day. You know, I'm not an unreasonable guy. And I think for the most part, I'm pretty easy to get along with. I'm a pretty easygoing cat. And the only thing I want out of Blog Talk and Mozilla is for them to work all the time, every time. That's all I want. I don't think I'm being unreasonable. This is kind of what they, present themselves as being, not only reliable, but consistently reliable. And I would have to take issue on both of those counts with these guys. But I don't think I'm going to do it here. I'm just tying up precious time. We're already 18 minutes. I already burned up 18 minutes and just throws me completely off my stroke. However, being the kind of guy that I am, we are going to accentuate the positive, and we're going to be looking at something I saw. I was just browsing around on Prager. Wasn't anything in particular that I was looking for. Usually what will happen is something will come across my news feed on Facebook, and then I'll go to YouTube or I'll go to PragerU, and I'll look it up, and I'll download it and convert it. But I wasn't really looking for anything in particular. I just wanted to see what was going on over there. And I came across this astonishing thing. I didn't know this, had no idea about this, taken completely by surprise. And I'm sure you will be too. Dennis Prager talks about happiness and unhappiness. Now, what I'm going to try and do here is I'm going to try to pull this up. Ah, well, saints be praised. Okay, Dennis Prager from Prager University. The thing was called The Key to Unhappiness, but that's not really what it's about. I'll let you listen to Dennis. Here we go. Dennis Prager, Prager University.
How many times have you heard someone say they want to make a better world? It is a noble sentiment, but very hard to achieve, right? Well, actually, it's quite easy. All we have to do is increase just one human trait. This trait is so powerful that it alone can make people happier without working on their happiness and make them better. And by better, I mean more generous, more honest, more kind, more everything good, without a single lesson in morality. So then, what is this one almost magical thing? Drum roll, please. It's gratitude. You can't be a happy person if you aren't grateful, and you can't be a good person if you aren't grateful. Almost everything good flows from gratitude, and almost everything bad flows from ingratitude. Let's begin with ingratitude. Here's a rule of life. Ingratitude guarantees unhappiness. It is as simple as that. There isn't an ungrateful, happy person on earth. And there isn't an ungrateful good person on earth. There are two reasons. Reason one is victimhood. Ingratitude always leads to or comes from victimhood. Ungrateful people, by definition, think of themselves as victims. And perceiving oneself as a victim or perceiving oneself as a member of a victim group may be the single biggest reason people hurt other people, from hurtful comments to mass murder. People who think of themselves as victims tend to believe that because they've been hurt by others, they can hurt others. And the second reason ungrateful people aren't good people is that ingratitude is always accompanied by anger. The ungrateful are angry, and angry people lash out at others. If ingratitude makes people unhappy and mean, then gratitude must make people happy and kind. And so it does. Think of the times you have felt most grateful. Were they not always accompanied by a feeling of happiness? Weren't they also accompanied by a desire to be kinder to other people? The answer, of course, is yes. Grateful people aren't angry, and they don't see themselves as victims. The problem, however, and it's a big one, is that in America and much of the rest of the world, people are becoming less grateful. Why? Because people are constantly told that they are entitled to things they haven't earned, what are known as benefits or entitlements. And the more things that people think they should get, the less grateful they will be for whatever they do get, and the more angry and therefore unhappy they will be when they don't get them. Here are two rules of life. Rule number one, the less you feel entitled to, the more gratitude you will feel for whatever you get, and the happier you will be. Rule number two, The more you feel entitled to, the less happy you will be. That's why, for example, children who get whatever they want are usually less happy children. We have a word for such children, spoiled. And no one thinks of a spoiled child as a happy child, and certainly not a kind one. The more that you feel that life or society owes you, the angrier you will get, the less happy you will be. As a result, we are increasing the number of angry, unhappy, and selfish people. The other way we are making people unhappy, and even meaner, is by cultivating a sense of victimhood. People are constantly told that they are victims because of their upbringing, because of past prejudice against their group, because of material inequality, because they are female, and for many other reasons. Next time you want to assess any social policy, ask this question first. Will this policy increase or decrease gratitude among people? You will then know whether it is something that will bring more goodness and happiness to the world or less. If I were granted one wish, it would be that all people be grateful. Gratitude is the source of happiness and the source of goodness. And the more good people and the more happy people there are walking around, the happier and better our world will be. If you have a way of achieving such a world without increasing gratitude, let me know what it is. I'm Dennis Prager.
Great stuff, Dennis Prager, Prager University. Not necessarily a spiritual guy here, really. I'm not. I'm just not that far along in that walk. But I do understand pretty clearly the concept of gratitude, not only amongst our fellows, you know, the good things that people do for you, not because they want to be, you know, some people do good things for the sake of being seen doing good things. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's still a good thing that they do. Their motivation might be somewhat questionable, but it's still a good thing that they do. You know, they're not doing the good thing in and of itself, which would be better, but it's still a good thing for whoever's benefiting from it. And I'm not talking about just that, but I'm talking about gratitude to God as, you know, however you perceive God to be. And in the Judeo-Christian demographic, the large measure of us, or I think we all got a pretty good idea about that. Anyway, if you have trouble with this, if you have trouble with this whole gratitude thing, some people do, just do this. When you get up in the morning, if you don't die during the night, then you ought to be able to get up in the morning. When you get up in the morning and you're sitting on the edge of your bed, and if you're like me, your dog's ready to go pee, and she's waiting patiently on you to wake up, and she's happy to see you this morning, or your cat, or your kids, or whatever. Or maybe it's nothing. Maybe you got to get up and go pee, because that happens a lot in the morning set. But at any rate, as you sit there, preparatory to doing, you know, whatever it is that you're getting ready to start your day out with, just do this. Just do this. Just say thank you, God. That's it. You don't even have to throw the God in there, because he'll know it's for him. Just say thank you. And while you're saying thank you, and you need to do a couple things. Number one, you need to be cognizant as to whom you are thanking. And then just run a little movie in your mind of all the great things that have happened to you, all the positive things, all those joys that you've been permitted to have. See? It's a small thing. But what'll happen? Has it happened with me? Is if you do this every day, you may find yourself doing it more than once a day. Because it's easy. Anybody can say thank you, God, or thank you. Anyone. You can do that. You don't have to get all, you know, Old Testament-y and biblically on it, and, you know, and get into the, you know, the King James Version speech. You don't have to do that. Just thank you. And like I said, run through your mind a list of all these things, because he can see it. A list of all these things, these great things, these cool things that have happened to you, that have benefited you, you know. And then go on about your day. Let your dog out to go pee. Go ahead and pee yourself if you're out there and, you know, just take care of business. And go on about your day. And again, like I said, you'll find that you say it more than once. And over time, as you start to say it more than once during the day, you'll get a little more detailed in considering and looking at all the things that you've been blessed with. Your job, your family, your friendships, relationships. And I think that's the first step. And if you stick with it, and you should, man, it's not hard to do. It's thank you. It's 2 seconds. Thank you. 3, thank you, God. And like I said, run that film, run that highlight film in your mind. He's going to be able to see it. And take those steps towards having a little bit of gratitude. And in that vein, we will now take a musical break. It is the bottom of the hour. I'm a little hacked, and I'm really working hard on trying not to show it. So, as we all need reminders from time to time, we will be back with more ACP after this brief musical interlude.
Brethren and sisters, be seated. Gather round me, everybody. Gather round me while I preach some. Feel a sermon coming on me. The topic will be sin, and that's what I'm against. If you wanna hear my story, then settle back and just sit tight while I start reviewing the attitude of doing right. You got to accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, and latch on to the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr. In-Between. You got to spread joy up to the maximum. Bring gloom down to the minimum. Have faith or pandemonium liable to walk upon the scene. To illustrate my last remark, Jonah in the whale, Noah in the ark. What did they do just when everything looked so dark? To positive, eliminate the negative, and latch on to the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr. In Between. No, don't mess with Mr. In Between.
Positive, eliminate the the negative and latch on to the affirmative.
Don't mess with Mr. In Between.
No,
don't mess with Mr. In Between. You got to act, get your way to positive. Eliminate the negative and latch on to the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr. In Between.
No, don't mess with Mr. In Between.
Lay that pistol down, babe, lay that pistol down. Pistol packin' mama, lay that pistol down. Oh, drinking beer in a cabaret, was I having fun? Until one night she caught me right, now I'm on the run.
Oh, lay that pistol down, babe, lay that pistol down. Pistol packing, mama, lay that pistol down. Oh, I sing you every night, ding, and I'll woo you every day. I'll be your regular mama, and I'll put that gun away.
Oh, lay that pistol down, babe, lay that pistol down. Pistol packing, mama, lay the thing down before it goes off and hurts somebody. Oh, she kicked out my windshield and she hit me over the head. She cussed and cried and said I'd lied and she wished that I was dead.
Oh, lay that pistol down, babe, lay that pistol down. Pistol packing, mama, lay that pistol down. We're three tough gals from deep down Texas way. We got no pals. They don't like the way we play. We're the rough, rootin', tootin', shootin' trio, but you'll see my sister Cleo. She's a terror, make no error, but there ain't no life to fair. Is what we tell her.
Lay that pistol down, babe, lay that pistol down. Pistol backin' mama, lay that pistol down.
ACP right here, right dang now. James Bostic with you. We're back. Welcome. Nice to have you with us. Appreciate you putting up with some of the technical rhubarb that was going on in our first part of that. I wish I had an explanation for it. I mean, the computer that I have is a desktop, and it is kind of old. But, I mean, it runs great. It's a good machine. And ordinarily, the browsers are working okay. But the operating system that I'm using is pretty antiquated by operating systems, and I need an upgrade on it, and I'm working on it, but sometimes Foxfire does great. Other times, you know, it's not so hot. It started out a little bit balky. I think for the most part, once we got back on, after I closed it out two or three times and refreshed it and brought it back up again and asked it nicely, everything went okay. It just kind of throws everything off because we had a bunch of stuff to talk about. And tonight, every minute was precious. So now we're kind of thrown. Big stuff happening. You know, the G7 summit meeting was this weekend. And I've got to, I just, you know, the guy knows what he's doing every minute. And usually somebody who says that, you know, they say it right before everything's getting ready to blow up. But this guy, he knows what he's doing every minute. He understands the theater. He understands the symbolism. He understands, I don't want to say showmanship, but to a certain extent, I can't really explain it as anything else. So we'll go with that of the G7. Now, what he said at the G7 that got, you know, all these people all upset and thinking, you know, have them thinking he's crazy, I mean, is nothing new. What he said at the G7 meeting to the European Union, representatives of the European Union, to Justin Trudeau from Canada, all these guys, it's what he said in the campaign. It's what he has said since he's taken office. And what is that? These are disastrous trade deals. These guys have been taking advantage of America for too long. But there was this gender empowerment breakfast. You know, the I am woman, hear me roar stuff, okay? So, and naturally, they bring up one of their most famous women at the G7 meeting, and that's Justin Trudeau. He's the moderator. He's the chairman for this breakfast meeting. And then there was somebody who was speaking, another undersecretary of women's studies or something. You know, I know what it sounds like, and I know I sound awfully chauvinistic, but I don't care. That stuff's stupid, and that's all there is to it. We don't really have any need for it. So he shows up late. Not real, real late. You know, 5-10 minutes late. They've already started when he comes in. So this undersecretary is making her butt-numbingly boring buzzword catchphrase comments. And the president of the United States walks in, and all the reporters, all the paparazzi guys, all the cameras, they start clicking when they see him entering. And so he just sucks all the oxygen out of the room. And this woman's up there talking about, you know, we're looking for a global community of I am woman, hear me roar kind of attitude. And he just, you know, he comes and sits down. And he knows what he's doing every minute. So, and then he leaves early. And he leaves early because he's going to Singapore to meet with North Korea's Kim Jong-un. And as he goes, he leaves behind this disgruntled gaggle of Lilliputian states who basically have grown used to the idea of United States leaders accepting the institutional ropes that bind the world's greatest power, and that's us. And now they are shocked and appalled that an American leader is actually putting America's interests first. Now, we don't know how the president's high stakes negotiating on trade and tariffs is going to turn out, or whether the American people will be willing to take any of the economic pain that may attend the correction of trade imbalances that basically have given favor to our partners and rivals at the expense of our own economy. But we have long needed to concentrate our partners' minds on the wisdom of changing their assumption that the United States will put itself second in order to uphold the post-war world order that frequently camouflages the subordination of our interests to theirs. Now, this global order that they're talking about, it's made up of transnational institutions that were built upon the rubble of two world wars. And when I talk about transnational institutions, I mean the United Nations, NATO, GATT, the general agreements on tariffs and trades, the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, the World Trade Organization, and the G7 group of the world's richest economies, which represents a little over half of all the global wealth. Now, these multinational groups are supposed to keep peace globally and manage the globalized economy so that it runs smoothly and equitably. This network of institutions, however, rests on some dubious ideas. One particularly tenacious one is that the old balance of power among sovereign nations failed and that led to the 20th century spectacular carnage. Nations that look first to their parochial interests and their distinct identities threaten global unification and harmony of interests that can better create and protect prosperity and democracy and human rights and blah, 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 blah. Okay, so what they want these nations to do is they want all the nations to surrender some of their sovereignty and subordinate some of their interests to those of the larger global village or the international community. This collectivization and centralizing of global order will increase prosperity and prevent the costly conflicts and wars that inhibit trade and damage the civilizational infrastructure and human resources upon which an increasingly interconnected global trade depend on. Mercantilism, colonial, and imperial exploitation all eventually become bad for business, and they lead to violent conflict. Finally, the global order aims to prevent this destructive cycle by promoting the political freedom that facilitates and fosters market freedom, provided that the market is subject to transnational institutions and regulations. Now, this type of idealism that I just talked about, this the world as the left sees it scenario, has deep roots in our foreign policy ideology, deep bipartisan roots. In other words, there are a lot of people on both sides, Republican and Democrat, that agree with this. Woodrow Wilson made it the justification for our entering the First World War. In his 1917 speech, asking Congress for a declaration of war against Germany, Wilson said that the war's lofty aim was to vindicate the principles of peace and justice in the life of the world as against selfish and autocratic power, because peace can never be maintained except by a partnership of democratic nations. Before the United Nations, we had what? We had the League of Nations, which was one of the illegitimate transnational children that came along after the First World War. Even going through a Second World War and the Cold War couldn't discredit this stubborn idealism that stayed within our foreign policy agenda. As the Soviet Union was disintegrating in 1991, George H.W. Bush spoke of a new world order, there it is again, where diverse nations are drawn together in common cause to achieve the universal aspirations of mankind, and that would be peace and security, freedom and the rule of law. After 9/11, his son George Jr. said that we had to have a single sustainable model for national success. Freedom, democracy, free enterprise. For these values of freedom are right and true for every person in every society. Well, that's not exactly true. Lots of society. Look at Islamic society, and that's all I'm going to say. Barack Obama went the same way, and he endorsed this same foundation of American foreign policy in his remarks about the Arab Spring revolts, which the United States supported because we recognized our own beliefs in the aspirations of men and women who took to the streets of Arab capitals, and our support for democracy put us on the side of the people. Why? Well, because freedom and self-determination are not unique to one culture. These are not simply American values or Western values. They're universal values. Well, the main problem with this, I'd like to buy the world a Coke and that kind of thing, is that this idealism, what they're talking about, how it would be in the perfect world. This idealism rests on a number of questionable assumptions. Let's take the idea that differences among the world's peoples and world's cultures are ultimately not as important as their similar preferences for peace and prosperity. Some cultures prefer peace and prosperity. and they prefer democracy and free market capitalism that just kind of is the fuel that runs that engine. However, some cultures, and this is just the truth, some cultures don't prefer peace and prosperity. History continues to document that some cultures want all sorts of things that are incompatible with peace and prosperity. National pride, revenge for dishonor, dominating others, military glory, or obedience to their God, like today's jihadists have repeatedly told us in word and in bloody deed. So rather than this harmony of interests, these universal interests, as President Obama called them, these diverse and often incompatible cultures continue to engage in the violent pursuit of their incompatible zero-sum interests and aims. When you have a cult, a theocratic system like Islam, that dictates your daily life, your government, how they're all melded in together, these guys are not down with peace and prosperity because they can't profit and they can't dominate and control in times of peace and prosperity. They have to have turmoil. They have to have upheaval. They have to have terror. Because it is through those things that they maintain their power. So the EU people, the G7, let me put it this way, the G7, They don't like the fact that Donald Trump has finally called them out after decades saying these are bad trade deals. These are not good deals for us. And like he told him, he said, you know, we're no longer going to be the piggy bank that you can continually rob. Those days are over. So and the last thing, and it goes back to the Second World War. If it weren't for NATO, another one of these supranational institutions, or the UN or the common market, that Europe would have slipped back into war after the Second World War. That these ruined states who didn't have the will, they didn't have the material means, more than, you know, secondly, to go back into war, that's ridiculous. They want to say, well, if it hadn't been for our collectivist group in NATO, we would have been back at war again, fighting the Russians or fighting each other. That's not true. What did keep them out of the war, what did keep Europe from falling back into that, had to do more with the Marshall Plan and the 40,000 nuclear warheads that the United States had, plus about 500,000 U.S. troops deployed in Europe. Those things were the marked stabilizers of Europe in post-war, throughout post-war Europe. And without these deployments, this whole idea of global order in the post-war would have been stillborn. It never would have happened. It only happened through United States influence and affluence, our treasure. And that brings us back. We got a few minutes. I'm going to close this up. We got a little weedy there, but we had to get some background. And that brings us to Trump's recent assertion that our right as a sovereign nation to participate in this global order and follow its rules only if following those rules contributes to the furthering of our interests. And that's making people crazy, legitimizing the specious idealism which our partners, I guess, and our allies hold up is this is how we ought to do it because this is the way we've had to do it. We think this is what works. And the reason it's worked out well for them, and it has worked out well, is, again, these trade deals are so ridiculously one-sided against the United States. Now, Donald Trump says these things, and basically he goes into the G7 in light of all these things that we've talked about here, and he says, we're going to be looking at things differently, and we're starting these tariffs, and here's why we're doing it, because your cheap products are killing our labor and American wages. We can't have that. You want to sell in the United States, that's great. We want you to, but you're going to do it on these terms, and the reason we're going to do it on these terms is because these terms will be more beneficial to the United States economy as well as the United States workforce and the United States workforce wages. And it's time for you guys to pony up. There's not a whole lot you can do about it to change our mind. You're just going to have to go along with us. And that's what they don't, that's what they're having a hard time with, because former presidents, both sides, Democrats and Republicans, have kind of subjugated themselves to this doctrine. And it's just this simple. You can't make America great if you don't put America first. You cannot make America great if you do not put America first. I'm going to write that down. That's good. I like that. Well, I'll tell you what, we are down at the we're down to the end of the show. We got about 5 minutes left. Excuse me, just a moment.
Alexa, stop.
She's giving me problems, man. You guys have an Alexa, Amanda, Allison, whatever it is. They're more trouble than they're worth. And she likes to horn in on conversations every now and then. But anyway, we didn't get to talk about any of the other stuff I wanted to talk about. But this G7 thing is important, and it's critical that we did spend a little time on it. I know it's kind of dry, kind of weedy, but you got to try and understand the perspective that these foreign leaders have had towards just thinking they're always going to get, you know, the high tit when it comes to the United States. And Donald Trump is saying no more. We're not going to be bled that way. We're not going to be drained that way. We're going to set this up to where it's more equitable and more profitable for the United States. And that's exactly what we want. There's nothing greedy about it. There's nothing mean-spirited about it. He's doing what he's supposed to do, and that's put the interests of the United States before the interests of other nations. Why? Because he is our nation's chief executive, and that's what he swore to do when they put him in the office. We got about 3 minutes left, but you know what? I'm beat. I'm tired of this whole thing, so I want to say good night and God bless. We will be back Thursday again when everything's working right and the atmospheric conditions are all lined up and the stars are in their proper alignment. We do this live two nights a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, here, Blog Talk Radio, Patriot Nation Radio Network. That's where the next time we'll be back on air will be on Thursday, starting at 7 p.m. with our show, ACP, followed up by Mark Hoffman and Patriot Nation Radio Live. Don't want to miss either one of these shows. We got some good stuff. We work really hard to present it the best way we can. And that, you know, that's just our commitment to you. We're going to do the very best we can all the time. God bless each and every one of you. God bless the United States. Like I said, we'll be back on Thursday taking a look at things as we do through a conservative's perspective. We'll see you guys then.